If you've ever found yourself spiraling down a late night rabbit hole of what am I meant to do and why haven't I found it yet? And let's be honest, who hasn't? Then you're in the right place. I'm Teresa White, career clarity expert and 5-time certified career coach, and I'm here to help you navigate the question of how to find a career that truly lights you up. On Career Clarity Unlocked, we're all about those light bulb moments. I'm talking to people who are still trying to figure out what they're meant to do, coaching them live to reach that magical, yes, this is it moment. And we'll also hear from those who've already found their dream careers and figure out exactly how they did it. Whether you're looking for inspiration or actionable advice on finding a career you love, I've got you covered. Time to unlock some career clarity. Let's dive in. Welcome back to Career Clarity Unlocked. Today, we're diving deep into what it really takes to build a fulfilling career. If you've ever wondered how to lean into your natural strength, get clarity on your next move, or build a personal brand that screams executive material, you're in the right place. And we'll also get real about resilience and how to navigate the moments that push us to our limits. Stay tuned for a very inspiring conversation. And I'm so excited that today Victoria Michaels is joining me. She's an executive career coach at DreamPath. She spent over 10 years as a founder of a marketing and branding company that she started at the ripe old age of 18. After having children, she sold the business to find more meaningful work. That's when she entered the job market for the first time. She struggled to find a position that aligned with work that lit her up, fair pay, and environments that were healthy and whole. She spent a few years bouncing around careers trying to figure it out. She ended up hiring a job search coach who taught her the fundamentals of job searching. With that, she landed her first dream role in tech with no degree and from a cold email. And then she joined DreamPath as a career coach back in 2022. Now she supports professionals struggling to land a new role, apart from her own experience, learning how to navigate this market and success in helping others land a fulfilling role. Let's get started. Welcome, Victoria.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Teresa. I'm grateful and happy to be here.
And I am so excited to be talking to you today. Your story, you're just such an inspiration. So I can't wait to share this with everyone here in the audience.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And I would love to start at the beginning. You have such a fascinating career story. I mentioned some of the highlights, but can you walk us through your career in a little bit more detail and share all the whole entire journey that you've been on?
Yeah, oh my gosh. I always tell people I feel like I've lived 100 lives by now. It's just, there's been so many twists and turns. It's been crazy, but I'm grateful to be here and I'm grateful to have seen my path through all the twists and turns and gotten to a place that I am today. But yes, so I started a marketing business at 18 because I was wanting to make some money and it wasn't driving at the time. And I thought, you know, what can I do right now to earn cash? And I saw that there were people out there that they were building websites, they were designing graphics, and it was just this service-based market that I had not known about before. And the 18-year-old in me was a little bit mad that there were people doing this, and then I wasn't doing this. And I was like, I can do better than this person. You know, that's someone in, you know, 18, 20, that's our mindset. So I launched this business and I got my first 5 clients and then I just kept on plugging away. I had no idea about how to run a business, how to acquire clients. I remember I would get on the phone with potential clients and I would like try to sound older because I didn't want them to know how young I was. Many I'd never told my age and now they probably know, hello. But I scaled the business. I acquired and bought a new one probably when my son turned 1. And then at about the age of 30, after I'd had my daughter, I realized that I was really bored. So we're going to get into like spark a type assessment, but I wasn't doing this thing where I was nurturing people. And that is like a fundamental aspect of my life that I carry with me. So that led me to pursue being a midwife. I know, crazy story, marketing business to midwifery, but I had a natural birth with my daughter and I had a great experience and I wanted to advocate and help women have great experiences as well. So I started studying to become a midwife. I was racing around town in the middle of the night, working alongside a licensed midwife to help deliver babies, attending prenatal appointments. But as I started moving along, I started to not understand how I could be that midwife. How can I be in control of this? Like I started to feel like this is a lot. This is a lot of pressure. And I wanted to have control over my schedule because I really didn't have a life back then. So I was like, I thought I found it, but this isn't it yet. And I was really disappointed having to leave that area. But then I actually started really getting into the workforce and led me to a lot of entry-level jobs. But the thing about it is because I had that entrepreneurship, I kept getting into the roles and like up-leveling, but still, I just didn't hit the mark. And so I needed something that had like, you know, this entrepreneurship side, this business side, and the ability to nurture and care. So that kind of led me to where I am today. I can elaborate on that. Many people share their career stories. Sometimes they can be boring, so we can I'll let you ask next question. I don't want to bore people. We're not here to bore people today.
Oh my God, none of this is boring. You started your business as 18. Transitioned into midwifery at 30, realized that, and I get that, like I can get the pull to it, but also how the responsibility, like hands down, one of the hardest, I think, careers to be in. Right. And the schedule, I mean, talk about unpredictability when you're talking about baby being born. And then transitioning into finding roles in tech and then to career coaching. Wow, so fascinating. And you already touched on the Spark It type. So for our listeners who are not familiar with this, the Spark It type assessment is an assessment I'm very passionate about because it helps us figure out what makes us come alive, not just what we're good or bad at, but what is that makes us feel fulfilled and able to perform at our full potential and gives us a sense of what we do matters. And when we met in Cancun earlier in the year, that's when I introduced many of the other career coaches to the Spark It type assessment. And you already touched on it, that your primary Spark It type is the advisor and your shadow, the nurturer. So the primary Spark It type is the strongest impulse for work that makes us feel really excited, inspired on purpose. And for you, that is guiding others to grow. So it's the work of coaching, mentoring, and advising that really fills you up and being able to walk beside others, being with them, guiding them along the way as they move toward their desired outcome.
Yes.
Does that resonate with you?
It does. It does. So I want to share, like when we were at the mastermind, I mean, we were there with some of the best in the coaching industry and just amazing women that have built very successful businesses. And they were blown away when she shared Spark It type. We were like, wait, what? Like we thought we knew, but yeah, like this is us. Like it was the first time I took an assessment and it actually felt like me. But yeah, absolutely. Like I'm such an advisor. Like I want to coach, I want to teach, I want to train. Like I love developing people. Like it, that lights me up. And that has been like, when I found roles that I had that aspect in it, I was like, okay. I'm on the right path. So definitely coaching is so aligned with that.
Wow. And thanks for sharing that experience from the mastermind. Yes, it was a really powerful moment. When it's awesome. And it's the same for me. When I first took the assessment, it was like, yes, I like finally my life makes sense.
Yes.
It finally all made sense. It made sense. All the decisions I made up to today, why something aligned, something didn't align. And it gave me the clarity I needed to move forward.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I want to share like the picture of this, like, there may have been like 8 women there. We were in a booked out, what was it, like a private room. Diana had given us gifts. We had some drinks. Like it was the best. And then here comes Teresa and we're just blown away. So I'm setting the scene for you because it wasn't like a little workshop. Like we literally discovered so much about ourselves in that moment. It was such a cool, fun experience. Like I'm there right now. I don't know if you are, but I'm there.
It was
I'm always in my brain.
That first evening was just magical. I mean, the whole entire week in Cancun was magical. But yeah, the first evening and being in a room with these incredible, inspiring women. Wow.
Yeah, it's such a blessing. I'll probably never forget that.
No, me neither. And your shadow spark archetype is the nurturer. The nurturers are about giving care and support, about offering support, seeing others, hearing others, holding others. And you often help to lift others up, walk beside them when they're in need, being deeply empathetic. And you often feel and see unease, pain, suffering in others, and you seek to ease it on a very personal, hands-on way. And you're able to provide that grounding presence that lets people know they are seen, they matter, and they're understood and cared for. Did that resonate with you as well?
Yeah, I think that's probably the strongest piece. Like, literally, that's how I do, like, live my life. I think even as a young child, my goal was to help people in life. And you don't really know when you're a kid, like, what that looks like. Like, I just did not know. But I mean, I think about experience of, you know, for a short time I worked as an EMT, you know, being in the back of an ambulance and a guy was had been impaled and was bleeding out and holding pressure on him and just talking to him like, it's going to be OK. We're going to get through this. And I also get very nauseous. So I'm riding in cars. So I was very nauseous at the time, holding pressure, trying to keep him, you know, safe and not bleeding out. And even just my experiences of working with pregnant women and their very vulnerable times of labor and attending to not only the physical needs, but some of their bodily needs that aren't always beautiful. And then just the blessing of being able to coach people, like, oh my gosh, like, just, you know, someone has an issue and, you know, we've walked that path as coaches. And here we are with the ability to share and understand and just be empathetic. Like, yeah, I can't think of a greater thing to do. And I'm so blessed that was given to me. Like, I feel really blessed because I think we need more in the world of nurturers. So I'm blessed.
Yeah.
Hard lift, but here we are.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree that being seen, feeling like we matter, that we're understood and cared for is such a fundamental human need. Mm-hmm. And being able to give and receive that is something so deeply important. And it's very special that you bring that quality.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So you're the first person from the mastermind that I met in person because we met at the airport. And
yes.
I could feel this energy because I was nervous, right? I just got off the plane. I'm like, I'm going to meet all these amazing career coaches for the first time in person. We're going to be at this luxury resort. Like, oh my God. Super nervous. Like, do I really belong there? Do I fit in? And then I meet Victoria at the airport. We got on the bus together and I was like, it's all going to be okay. I'm not alone. And you have that immediate presence on people of like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah. You know, it was so funny. I'm going to step back. I would say probably about 2 years ago, the founder of the company, DreamPath, shared your profile with me. And I was like, dang, this girl's doing really good. I was like, oh my gosh, she's doing so good in her career coaching business and helping so many people. And then fast forward, I'm at Cancun with like 500 people asking me if I want to go on a taxi ride with them. And I'm like, I'm from South Carolina. I'm like, small town. I'm like, wait, what is going on? It's a lot. But then there's, you know, Heidi Klum model Teresa standing there with her suitcase. God. Do you want some water? And I'm like, I have found my home in life. So no, oh my gosh, you were so kind, so sweet, so helpful. Oh my gosh, just amazing. I'm grateful to know you. And I don't mean that lightly.
Aw, that means so much. And same here.
The nurturer's coming out and like, I don't even try. It's just, it's love. It's love.
Yeah. It's oftentimes the spark archetype is so much who we are that we cannot not do it. It's just natural. Like, it's something we cannot not do.
Right.
It's us.
It's us.
And I didn't even know you were working as a EMT.
Yeah.
As well. You have such a fascinating story. But I'm wondering, so that drive to coach, mentor, guide, give care, take care, support others. Have you always been able to do that at work? Or was that parts that were missing in the past and then you were seeking them? How, and did that play into how fulfilled you were in previous roles or how not fulfilled you were?
Yeah. So when it was more of like a strong, like business role, I had a lot of like business acumen, but not a lot of nurturing and care. It seemed very transactional. So there was always, what is the purpose of this? And if I couldn't find a purpose besides financially turning money for a corporation, which is great, I'm glad we do that in the world. But for me, because of who I am, which I didn't choose who I am, but who I am, I couldn't do that. So any transactional roles, like if it, like I love sales roles, but sometimes if it was a sales role, I couldn't, because if someone said no, I'm like, okay, well, they can't afford it. And you know, so the nurture was like, it's okay. But yeah, I mean, and that was the reason for selling my business. I just outgrew it, and it wasn't giving to my heart and my soul, and I needed to find something. So I went way far to the other side, but then I came to find my balance, which is where I am today.
And that's beautiful. But how was it when you had your own company in marketing? Did you feel there were moments where you were able to guide others, nurture others, or was that like that piece was missing?
Yeah, I think at the beginning it was a little bit, and I think more of it was when someone came to me, a client, and they wanted something done, and I was able to just do it to the best of my ability and just like deliver and pound and just give them my all, because that was really important. So there's a piece of when I do something, I have to do it 100%. And so they saw that when they came to me that they were going to be taken care of. So thank you for reminding me that, because that is that customer care, customer centric care was foundational in that role. So even maybe I kind of got bored of like just, you know, the constant like day-to-day task. I do remember that being a big piece. And now as a coach, like, you know, when there's deliverables and things that we're helping our clients with, like, again, it's that piece of, I'm not doing this to do it. I'm doing this because I care for you and I want you to be successful in finding your next role. So it's a different dynamic. But yeah, thank you for reminding me that. It's, you know, long time ago.
But I love how beautifully that illustrates how your qualities that make you you and that give you that sense of doing something that matters and being fulfilled can come out in so many different ways. It can come out in the customer service piece and delivering a product that really helps them. It can come out when you're working in midwifery, when you're an EMT, but you can also lean into it in the corporate world. Maybe there were a team that you were supporting or individuals inside the companies or customer service sales that you were coaching, mentoring, advising, taking care of. And now that you're in coaching, this is what you do for the majority of the time. But there are so many different ways we can tap into these impulses that make us feel alive and excited and on purpose.
Absolutely. And I so agree with that, like the ability to tap into those special, unique traits that you have, and that helps your work feel fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so important that we become aware of it and lean into it and allow ourselves to lean into it. Because otherwise, there will always be a piece that we're missing and searching for. If you wouldn't be in a role where you got to do any of that work, you might be super good and really successful. But I can imagine there would always be a piece missing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. And that's what so many people experience in their careers is they might be successful and do really great work, but something is missing.
And that's so true. Like to walk away from the idea, because I invested so much time, so much studying, so much energy, to walk away from that was hard because I gave it my heart. But like you said, like there was something that just wasn't aligned with my next step and where I needed to be. And we have to listen to that, because if you don't, like it follows you and follows you and follows you. And then 10 years down the line, you're trying to get out and you're like, I should have done this back then when the voice was whispering. That's one of my favorite people say, Oprah.
Yeah. And I can imagine how hard that was. Like building a business for 10 years, it's your baby.
Yes.
And giving that up that's a big decision. But I think in your case, or in most cases, is you didn't just throw these last 10 years away. You've learned and grew, and like you built a business, and all of that experience and skill and knowledge you're taking with you into something that is hopefully more aligned. So it's so important that we think of it like not throwing experience away, but pivoting it in a new direction that is more aligned with who we are.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I love that. I feel that deep in my soul. I didn't know it at the time what I was doing. Like when you study like sparkotypes, like now it makes sense. But at the time, like there's just misalignment in you and you're trying to fix it. But yeah, you're so right. Like those qualities and skills and experience have followed me. And it's paid off. 10 years of doing something, I think I've heard before, if you do something for 10 years, you're expert. I don't know if you're expert, but you know what I mean? You become where like, this is a natural thing that I can do. So it's interesting. Well, I'll later research what expert status means and get back to you on that on the next one.
Sounds good. And I think it's a loose definition because there'll always be one person on earth who will know more than us.
Right.
And there'll always be people who will know less than us. So it's probably more about who you compare yourself with than a just baseline of you're an expert or not.
Teresa's a wise sage. I love this.
And on that note, I also have a gut feeling. This is just my theory and not building on any knowledge base here. But I have a feeling that as women, we tend to set the bar for expert higher in general than maybe male professionals would. Just because we feel like we have to prove ourselves and we have to be better and we're not good enough. And all these imposter syndrome beliefs we carry with us that tend to be more common in women than in men. Not saying they're not not around in men, but it's just percentual higher.
Yeah, I mean, we see it like culture isn't always easy on women. It's, you know, it's just not. You look at like, you know, what we were playing with as kids, you know, Barbies and dolls, and you're gonna grow up to be a mother and play with your little kitchen and learn. You know, there's a lot to unpack there, but society in the world is not easy on women. There are beyond high expectations on us when we're young, when we're old, when we're middle aged. It's a lot. It's a lot. True. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting being a female, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for the knowledge, but yeah,
society. We're superheroes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't even know how it's possible to have a full-time job as a mom, to run a business as a full-time job, and then have your actual life around that too. It's like three full-time jobs you're somehow juggling.
It never stops, yeah. but I think it gets us grit. Yeah.
Which it makes us just even more resilient and powerful.
Yes. Yeah. There's some female right now that is working with a cold that probably has a toddler around her that's got, you know, maybe family coming in town. It's got to cook dinner for her husband and then her boss is going to call her, at 6 o'clock. But she's still doing it and she's still doing it lovely. So
yes, absolutely.
That's being female. Lots of stuff. Yeah. We make it happen.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to like have a, I don't know, like something going on, like a campaign over here.
I'm in, Victoria.
I feel like we're running for office here. We're just going.
All right. I mean, elections are coming up. We might as well join.
Yeah.
All right. You can vote for us.
Yeah. You can vote for us. I'll be VP. Because you'll learn that I don't like leading. I don't like to be the head honcho. So.
Okay. You just brought up not liking to lead. I want to bring up a topic that a lot of people get kind of nervous around, which is the anti-sparkotype. So when you take the sparkotype assessment, you have a primary and shadow sparkotype, which suggests is the work that makes you feel alive and excited and energized. And then we have an anti-sparkotype, and that's usually our heavier lift. And what's so important with the sparkotype, it never tells us we're good or bad at something. It tells us what energizes us and what drains us. And we can go super good at things that drain us, really skilled. But when we're quite honest with ourselves, if we do it all day, every day, it is a heavy lift and our internal battery will get drained. And I see this with so many people who are experiencing symptoms of burnout, that it isn't always just the amount of work they do, but it's also the type of work, and it's a really heavy lift or a drain for them. And for me personally, my anti-sparker type is the advocate. And while I care about so many causes and I'm really passionate, about the environment, I'm passionate about females in leadership, there's so many topics I'm passionate about. But taking the role of an advocate, if I had to do that all day, every day, my energy would tank. Mm-hmm. And Victoria, in your case, your anti-sparker type showed up as the warrior. And this, it suggests that the act of leading people could be energy draining for you. And it doesn't mean you're bad at it. And I think you're actually a really great leader. But the act of having to gather people and get them all on the same path in the same direction could be a heavier lift. Did that resonate with you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's funny, like, we were just talking about, you know, strong women and all this. Like, when I learned that my anti was a warrior, I was like, I have failed at life, because this is, the other part of me is I am a warrior. Like, I'm running marathons, I'm doing this, like, I'm a warrior. But the truth is, I don't need to be in the spotlight in order to do things. And I learned that if I'm in tons of meetings, like back to back, it's draining. And no matter what I do, no matter if it's a break. So I have to really be mindful calendar, like, hey, like 15 minute break, like walk outside for a second, take a deep breath. Being the person, I'm very good at leading me. I'm really good at leading me. I'm good at nurturing, encouraging, advocating for people, helping them succeed. But then when it comes to multiple people, I check out. I'm like, but I can lead me. But over here, like, I don't want to lead all, you know? So, yeah. And it's weird, because I even pulled you aside and talked to you about this, because I'm like, wait a second, now what am I going to do with my career? I pulled you aside and I was like, but wait, I do this, like, this is my job. Like, I talk to people, I'm this mentor. I was like, but that's my anti. And you're like, but that doesn't mean you're not good at it and you're not supposed to do it. It just means it's a heavier lift. And when you told me that, I was like, okay, I've got it. And once I got back from Cancun, I started implementing different strategies and you talk about this so beautifully, about you're still going to have those functions sometimes in your jobs of doing the warrior task, but it's how do I do these in a way that doesn't drain me? Even though it's a heavy lift, but you're still going to need to do it, right? I want to get your take on this, because, like, I feel like you're the wise person here, because, like, you make people feel better when you take this test and it says this is your anti.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you're so open to sharing that. And you're a warrior. Like, there is not a question that's worth, like, what you've been through in your life and how you show up, you're a warrior. And I think we have to also separate that being a warrior in life is a very different definition than the more narrow definition inside the sparker type assessment of what they define, like what their warrior sparker type means. And I also think, as many people on earth, there is as many different ways we can show up as a leader. And some people who might be more a warrior sparker type might really enjoy about being the person up front and gathering and leading this group and people on this mission. And others might be equally successful as leaders, but they might be more like, I'm here with this group and I'm here to guide and coach and mentor this group and support this group. And this is how I see myself as your leader, to I'm here to be with you and guide you and coach you. Both, there's nothing right or wrong, but one might just come more natural to you than the other.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I I'm sorry, I'm moving beyond, but I want to say, you're going to tell others about Sparkotype, et cetera, like how to do it. But I just want to say, like, this is so insightful. And I really do encourage others to connect with Teresa and take your own Sparkotype, because I'm telling you, like, when you learn, so when you learn the things that you gravitate towards, it's super helpful because it's clarity. But then when you learn, like, where it's a little bit more challenging, that's where you change a lot of things. That's when you're like, okay, like, either I make a simple shift in my life or I make a big shift. So I really want to encourage people to connect with you on this, because I'm telling you, like, once I learned about it, like, it gave so much clarity. It was just, yeah. I've given myself a break too, like, because I always thought, like, if you're not, like, the leading, then you're not a leader, right? Like, if you're not at the boardroom and, you know, tearing it down, whatever, then that means that you're not a strong person. And I've always felt like, as a kid, like, when I was a child, I was super, super shy, like the shyest kid ever. And so I naturally was not leading. I didn't come up with games and tell my friends, listen to me. So I think that, like, from that, I learned throughout life that you're not a leader. And so, like, it was a lot of dichotomy about learning the difference between this and this. And it gave me a lot of clarity. Like, I truly feel better, and I'm aware. And that's the key of being aware of these different aspects and then what to do with it.
Thank you for sharing that, Victoria. And that's one thing I love. Also, another thing I love a lot about the Sparkotype assessment is that it also tells us there's nothing wrong with us. Yeah. Every human on earth has things that energize you and that drain you. There's not a single human being that doesn't find anything draining. And there's nothing wrong with it, right? I mean, the most common anti-sparkotype is the performer of public speaking. And that is a heavy lift for a lot of people. And in no way does it mean that something's wrong with you because you don't like public speaking or it seems draining for you. And it also doesn't mean you should never, ever do it. But as in your case, it can give you the awareness of, like, okay, if I do have to give a big presentation, it's going to take a lot of energy out of me. I still want to do this presentation because it's really important to me, and I'm going to prepare and I'm going to practice for it. But what can I do to offset this energy loss of, like you said, can I schedule a 15-minute break after to recharge my energy how you did? If I know, and the same for me, right? If I have, for me, a lot of service-driven work gets very draining. If I'm on calls all day, every day, my energy does tank. So I know if I do more than 4 calls a day, my energy is going to tank. So that's how I arrange my schedule, if no more than 4 calls a day. And it's so powerful when you learn, like, there's nothing wrong with me because I can't give a big presentation. I can't do more than 4 calls a day, or I can't do this or that, or I don't feel like I'm the best leader. There's nothing wrong. It's just, okay, this is something that drains me, and how do I want to approach it? Do I want to do the work and approach it from a different mindset? Do I not want to do the work? Do I want to plan in breaks or give myself grace when I do this? And it just makes things easier.
Yeah. Gosh, I love this. Like, I think one of the things I'm hearing you say is that, like, giving ourselves a break, like, it's almost like we have, like, so many high expectations of I have to be good at everything, and I've got to be this, and this. Hustle culture right now is super hard. Y'all are going to burn out. Hustle culture. I've been there, done it. Got burned out. But I do see this. It's like we just need to give ourselves a break. Like, it's okay if we're every task we're not excellent at. Some, like you said, we're all different. And that's what's great about, you know, teams coming together. We all have our different areas, and then we come together, and it's magic.
Yeah, 100%. And I see that so much. My social media specialist, her primary Sparkotype is the maker. She loves creating things. And it's something I can do, but it's not going to fill my bucket. So every time now I delegate things to her that are create this podcast, create this blog, put together these gift boxes for our clients, she lights up. And it's just so great for me to know that it's not what's going to fill my cup. I'll get frustrated if I have to do it all day, every day, but I can give it to someone who loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's so good. It's I love that you talk about that, because the whole creators, if there's creators, listen, that's a whole different, like, you know, beasts of being like that. That is their joy in life. Yeah. And you cannot take that from them. That is their joy. And they're not, you're not going to put a creator in an accounting role. Like, their creators have to create. And maybe there are creators in an accounting role. I don't know, but you get what I'm saying. Artists, they paint, you know, so yeah.
No, they are in, I've worked with clients who are, for example, makers. So makers are the ones who love to create, take an idea and make it into something that is in this world. And I have seen people who ended up in roles similar to accounting because they grew up and maybe that wasn't celebrated in them, or they were like, yeah, you're good at drawing, but, or you love building things, but I think you should do something like your dad did. He's an accountant, so you should do that too. And then the societal pressures get on us and be like, okay, this is not something that's nothing what you're doing there. Do this. And then they do this for 10 years and are good at it, are successful, but are unfulfilled and unhappy and don't know why. Because they keep like, yes, I'm good at this. I can do it. I've spent 10 years doing it. I studied it. I got promoted. But what's wrong with me that I don't feel fulfilled?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually got to a place where I was going to all of my friends asking them, what do you think I'm good at? What should I do for my career? You know, because I didn't know at that point after selling my business, becoming a mom, like, what are you doing? And it's just like, literally my friends got tired of talking to me about what Victoria was good at, because it wasn't one conversation. And if there's people that are struggling with career clarity, you may find that you do this. You're having multiple conversations with people and then you revisit, recircle around. At a point, like, I think my friends got really tired of like trying to help me figure out, and which, you know, honestly is how I led into career coaching, which was from my journey of trying to figure it out. I ended up stumbling upon coaching, but yeah, like, it's just, it's funny when I think back to that advice. Well, just get a LinkedIn page. Maybe you can find something there. So I'm glad I listened to that person. She was smart.
Oh, good. And you eventually found your way.
Yeah, I did. And it's funny, like, life has a, like we talked about, twists and turns. So it was never like I woke up and I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to be a career coach. Like, that was never in my thing. But what it was I went through the journey of career coaching, had an amazing time, learned how to literally hack my job search to where I truly believe at any point I can hack my personal job search at any point in the market. I'm not afraid of that. And I want people to get to that point. But, you know, career coaching wasn't. And until, like, once I got the excitement of knowing that I could do this for myself and then I was invited to become a coach, it was like, oh, my gosh. You know, that advocate nurturer was so excited. She's like, oh, my gosh, I would love to help people because I know how to do this. And now I want to help other people. And I do think, like, there's no greater joy than doing work that you love and having that financial independence and financial abundance for the slew of things that come our way, whether it's, you know, bad things or great things. Like, it's so important to have that. So I'm passionate about it. But yeah, you see the spark of type coming alive as we speak. It's crazy.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And I love that when people light up in that moment. That's what I live for. It's like seeing like, oh yeah, this is me. Oh, I love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're thinking about a title for our episode today, and I thought about you, Victoria. The word resilience came to mind. And I know you've been through a lot of ups and downs in your life. How has resilience played a role in your life? And how has that shaped you?
Oof. Oh, man. See, I take a deep breath. I'm like, I got to think, how has that shaped me? Well, I think, you know, we're all dealt cards, right? So my story is not the worst story ever, right? It's not. And so I can never, ever pretend to complain about life. But I definitely had a very rocky road, a very, very rocky road, and just no set of being steady in life, of feeling like, you know, I'm going to be, my physical needs will be met, my emotional needs will be met. And I think growing up in that and trying to, you know, come through out of that, of being like a victim of trauma, et cetera, we won't get too crazy in this, but It's hard. It's hard. It definitely affects you, and it's not something that you know how to deal with. And it's just, it's hard to navigate that, especially as a child. And then, you know, growing up, and we were talking about our kids, like teenage years, it's so difficult. But I had to learn that no one was coming to help me. I got to a place in life, and I realized that I didn't have a lot of mentors to pull from. And if I was going to pull myself out of like poverty and difficult situations, I was going to have to find a way, make a way. And I think that resiliency has been that if I want something to happen, I've got to do it. I've got to find something, some type of strength within me, and be able to pull from that and get to my next step. And once I kind of got out of like some difficult situations, you know how life is, you know, you're sailing along doing great. And then, you know, you get hit back down again. And so it's just been something I've had to pull from. And I recently started marathon running to help with that as well, or running like cross country, et cetera, because it's a way of teaching and training my mind. Like if something bad were to happen, you know, if there's a, you know, a health diagnosis, or, you know, I get in a car accident, or, you know, my child's struggling, there's something that I can pull from and train my brain that when life gets difficult, we're going to have to find a way, make a way. And then it's a weird physical, you know, thing to train your mind through that, but I guess it's working for me, so I'll stick to it.
No, this is incredible. And it's really hard when life knocks you down to get back up and to pull yourself back out. What can you tell people who are in one of those rough patches and they're don't know how to pull themselves out? What's the first thing that you would recommend for them?
Oh, man. You know, I think one is to think about the people that are depending on them. So I know anytime like I've been in a rough patch, I was always like, I've got my kids. I am someone that they look up to. I've got to pull myself out of this. So whether it's your friends, your family, sisters, brothers, or just people in your network that, you know, wait for your post, want you to show up, like you've got to think about like who, if I'm not in this spot, like who am I affecting if I'm not getting myself out of bed and giving it even 10% effort? Sometimes we don't have any effort to give, just 1% as much as we can. And something I heard recently would be about, you know, once you get to where you're going in life at the end of time, however that looks for you and, you know, your beliefs. But let's say in your particular belief, you see that you meet your creator, and then they show you what your life could have been if you would have like, you know, pulled through and gotten through. And I'm just, and I think about that a lot. Like we were talking about the podcast, like I don't like being, you know, center of attention. I don't like being on podcasts. I don't like, you know, being on camera, but it's like, I feel like we've got to do these things. Like we've got to pull up, get through these times, because like there's something else on the other side. And we weren't just created just to live and breathe. I believe that we were given a purpose here. Doesn't matter what you believe. I truly believe that we were giving that. So I think you just got to get up. And sometimes, like I said, getting up is just walking to the fridge some days, you know?
Yeah.
And if that's what you can do, is walk to the fridge, get back in bed. But tomorrow, maybe walk outside. But yeah. And I truly want to say, if anyone is struggling, like we feel you, we're sending you good vibes, and this will pass. I have a ring on right now that says this too shall pass. And
oh, so, yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you were speaking, what I was wondering about, because as a career coach, you work with a lot of executives. And a lot of times we look at executives and be like, their life must be perfect from start to finish. Is that the picture that you see when you work with them closely? Or do you also see that they've had challenges to overcome and resilience is what actually got them to where they are now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, it varies, but many have faced imposter syndrome and they push through. I would say a lot of female clients that I've worked with have face that, whether it's ageism or whether it's imposter syndrome or dynamics in the workplace of them because they're female not being respected or taken seriously. And men have dealt with issues as well. So I think like that is one of just not feeling good enough and dealing with all those dynamics and workplace culture, toxic environments. But I think a lot are angry right now. I would say they're angry about, and not in a, you know, mean way, but just like they're frustrated, I guess a better word of being in the market and not having to job search before, that it being easy to get a job, that they were just internally referred or someone gave them a role and they're very frustrated. Like, why? Like, after all of my years of experience, can I not get a call back? Like, what's going on? And I that's one thing that I see a lot of, and they can't understand it. And as coaches, we understand the dynamics of the market, but it still just doesn't make sense. It's still hard, you know, if there's something amazing out there that's available to help you, how are you passing that over? Yeah, we definitely have an interesting market right now.
Yeah. So how do you help these people? Like, what is it that you see working right now? Even at the higher levels, they're on the market for the first time, really looking for work and not landing something. What is it they need to do?
Yeah, it's probably not the favorite answer that I'm giving, but it worked for me. If it worked for me with my crazy background of no degree, ups and downs, just crazy stuff, when I look at these professionals' background, I know that it will work for them. So, and it's, you know, everyone knows the answer to it, but it is networking. So firstly, their internal network. So like their warm network, that is where a lot of people find success of who do I know that could potentially refer me. They're working at this company. There's a new position. Let me go over there and say, hey, like I can do this position. The other thing is that cold network, tapping in, having to go out there and be relentless. And it's not easy. It takes time. It's frustrating. You've never had to do this. Well, I totally get it. But going out there and connecting with hiring managers, senior leaders, recruiters, those that are in lateral roles, and going out there and making a case for yourself. And there's a lot of people say like, well, networking doesn't work. Well, the two things I want to make sure is that they understand, okay, what their correct target role is. Okay, if they're targeting the right role, that affects your process is messed up if it's the wrong target role. And then the second is making sure that you understand what this company is looking for. So, you know, this company has a very specific need. It's in a specific industry, a specific niche. So you've got to make sure when you're reading the job description that when you send that outreach message, it's going to speak out to them. So like, you know, let's say you're connecting with someone for a podcast or for Sparkotype. Like, you've got to make sure that you're asking this person, like you're connecting to that person, the reason why, the reason to come. Like, we have to make sure that we have clarity as to why, like when we see these messages that don't convert, it's just because it's very generic. It's why, you know, I've got a lot of messages in my inbox. It's not hitting. But yes, networking done in volume-based, right roles, right message, very targeted message. It will move the needle. It takes time, but it will move the needle. I'm curious on your thoughts on that, Teresa.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. It is about building relationships. I think especially in this market, being one out of hundreds of resumes, the chances are just not in your favor.
Yeah.
No matter how perfect your resume is, what are the chances they pick out one out of, I don't know, 600, 800, whatever. So it is about building relationships and being the one who actually takes that extra step off personalizing that outreach, getting in touch with the hiring manager, explaining why, even if your background is different, but why you're uniquely positioned to solve the problem they're hiring for.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort, but I mean, I see it time and time again, like it works, it works, it works, it works. And my first role in tech was from a cold email. Like, I found a company that sold a SaaS product for midwives. I've had a business. I understand like midwifery knowledge, EHR. So I send out a customized message to them and they're like, this person matches my need. So we have to think about that. Like, that's the need, the match, and sending out that message. I'm very passionate about networking because I know it works, and I almost want to network for people and just sit there all day and send your messages because I know they would convert. I know that they would because you guys have great backgrounds. We just got to get the right message and spend time pounding away at the computer. It's not easy, especially if you haven't done it before. Not fair either.
Yeah. So what advice do you give them? How many network messages? How long should they be? How often do they follow up? What's your networking that actually converts?
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think it's case by case, especially for roles. Like some roles, it's in more demand. Like there's more demand for those roles. So it's going to be a little bit easier because there's a lot out there. And, you know, it might be a little bit harder if you're targeting one that there's not as many roles. But I like to start at 10 per company. This was the personal plan that I had worked. It was 10 people per company. So it had to include hiring managers. It had to include senior leaders. That would be my first start. So it's find as many people, even if it was a senior leader and it wasn't the same role, just I knew that they had a senior position so they could potentially connect me to the right person. I would also within that try to get some type of peer. So whether it was a lateral or whether maybe it was the sales department, because we all know that those in sales are amazing. They're connected. They talk. So I was trying to get at least 10 people. When I would send that message, I would wait. And then if I didn't hear back, that meant I was going to try to send out a little bit more. Who else can I connect with? Like what else? Because it's not hitting here. And then I would also make sure to test my outreach email. So if I send out an outreach message and I've sent it to a couple different companies and I've worked that approach, then I know that there's a conversion problem with my message because, okay, I've done the work over here, but the conversion's a problem. So I've got to go back and tweak my message. So I found it very helpful when I had the like a very customized message. So this company doing what in what space, and then talking about the three things that they're looking for in particular in that job description. So what are the three most important things that I see there? And then instead of talking about those, I'm talking about how I delivered on that. These are the things that I've done. I also like a call to action at the end. So like schedule time for us to chat. So I'll either give them a calendar link or give them a couple of different options to choose from. So that's my start. But it's like, if I really want a role at this company, just be relentless of trying to find the next person and following up to three times. Like, obviously, if you get a no, then don't fall. Don't spam people. We're not here to do that. But sometimes people are busy. Sometimes, you know, whatever's going on. So you've got to keep putting yourself out there. Volume-based approach. And for me, it was 10-10. So 10 roles a week, 10 people per each role. And then I would try to connect with like 10 different peers that could potentially at another company give me a referral. And that process worked. But I've seen process more of like 30 to 50 outreach messages a day. So I've seen that trending as well with a lot of professionals. So volume, up the volume, up the volume.
Thanks, Victoria. That is so helpful. And I think it really gives our listeners tools to what works. It might not be the thing they like doing the most, and I get why. It is uncomfortable. It's stepping out of your comfort zone, but the rewards are so worth it. And what I loved seeing is that in your outreach, you're very clear about, I understand your company and I understand the position you're hiring for. I understand the problem you're looking to solve. And this is how I delivered on this in the past. I actually have a pattern of success in delivering on this. And here it is. And it's really presenting it to them on a silver platter of like, here, I know what you're looking for, and this is how I match it. Like, you don't have to go through my resume and figure it out on your own. Here it is.
And Yeah. And the thing that I'm remembering a lot of things today, Teresa, from after having two children, one's a teenager, it's like the mind is gone. But one of the things I was remembering actually is how I started my business was the outreach process. So I literally, you know, 18 years old, sat there and messaged people. Like, I had a couple different messages that I would try. So I messaged my potential clients at that time of saying like, hey, like, this is the service that I offer. I understand you're in X space. Like, here's what I can do for you. Here's my prices. That is how I built my business. I did not do anything. I literally sat there and cold messaged female entrepreneurs all day long. So I think what happened was once I learned the strategies of job search, that's when I was like, oh, I need an outreach plan. So that's how that came together. And I guess why psychologically, I'm like, I know it works because I've seen it work on the business end. And now I know that it works on job search. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
No, and it is so, job search is so similar to marketing, but it is harder than marketing, I think, because we have to market ourselves. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, it's so much easier to market a product or a service than ourselves. But if you can somehow just step outside of this for a little bit and think about yourself as a product that you're trying to market, what would you do? You would reach out to people who might need this product or that service. And what would you tell them why they need it? And when you can put on that marketing hat, then that networking and outreach can also become a little bit easier.
Yeah. And I think like if you're working with an amazing coach like Teresa, you know,
or Victoria.
Thank you. You know, it's ability like, you know, that, excuse me, that's what coaches like are known for, is their ability to help with that. So like, you don't know what to say, ask your coach, like literally, like, I'm scared to, I don't know how to position myself. How do I do that? If you don't have a coach, you can get a coach or go to ChatGPT, start, you know, it's not a perfect message, but start saying, hey, I'm in this space. Here's my resume. What are the like 3 to 5 unique skills about myself that differentiates me amongst my competitors? Like, get a computer to tell you if it's just like, it's too much, but there's people out there that will help you and definitely believe in yourself. Cause I mean, I know, you know, like we come across professionals all the time that are just incredible, explicit backgrounds, and self-belief is an issue, but man, we got to believe in ourselves because no one will at the end of the day. And we want that job. We want that job. We don't want Susie to get it, even though we like Susie.
I love ending this on the note of believing in yourself. This is what it all comes down to in the end, is you have to believe in yourself. And Victoria, this was just so incredible. And I could be talking to you for another 3 hours. But I'm sure our listeners would love to connect with you and learn more about you. Where can they find you?
Yeah. So my big thing is I'm on LinkedIn. I'm a little bit on Instagram, but you know, I'm more on LinkedIn. There it is. Thank you for including that, because I was probably going to mess that up. But Victoria Career Coach. And yeah, I always tell professionals just reach out, and yeah, I'm happy to connect. And I like to post a lot about career advice, but also a little bit of empowerment in there as well, because I do feel like it's important. But I definitely recommend to connecting with Teresa, especially with Spark a Type. It literally will blow you away. And I mean, we were at the mastermind and we had all these entrepreneurs and they were just blown away. So there's, sorry, I'm trying to end this really quick, but there's clarity on that. So like, start with the career clarity, that piece of getting that underway, and then that's going to help you streamline that process. So Teresa's good to help with that.
Thank you, Victoria. That means so much. And if you're not following Victoria on LinkedIn yet, you absolutely have to. So again, it's Victoria Career Coach on LinkedIn. She shares such incredible posts. I was telling her before we went live, I was like, I'm blown away by your LinkedIn posts every day. It's incredible. So she is definitely someone you want to follow. And Victoria, I am so thankful that you joined me today. And I hope our audience walked away with lots of aha moments. I definitely did. And fresh insights into shaping your career path, whether that's networking, personal branding, or finding the resilience to keep going. Victoria's wisdom has really given us insights on how it's done. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Career Clarity Unlocked. If you're feeling stuck in that what's next spiral and are ready to finally break free, let's chat. You can book your free Career Clarity call where we'll uncover what's really important to you, tackle any obstacles holding you back, and map out your best next step. Schedule your free 30-minute call today on careerbloomcoaching.com. And before you head out, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you never miss an episode. If today's conversation gave you new insights and inspiration, please leave a review. It really helps us reach more amazing listeners like you. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend or on social media. Your support truly means the world. Thanks for hanging out with me, and I'll see you next time.